and welcome to Yacht Blast, the Northeast Caribbean's weekly programme of rock, blues and sailing news with me, Gary Brown. And this week it's our St Martin Heineken Regatta special, and it's been a great week. Our reports from out on the water include the Budget Marine Match Race and the start of the Gill Commodores Cup for spinnaker boats. We talked to Gill CEO Nick Gill about why they have sponsored the Commodores Cup and take a look at their new line of warm weather regatta clothing. Later we meet Olympic champion Robbie Haynes. Robbie has some rather interesting opinions on canting keels and the America's Cup. All this and more on the world's favourite sailing show. What a difference a day makes. That front is already here. We have light rain showers and the wind out of the north at 8 miles per hour. That'll cool the guys down in the last day of the St Martin Heineken Regatta.
Island 92.
And let's go straight into our coverage of the 30th St Martin Heineken Regatta, which is in its final day today, Sunday the 7th of March. The festivities began with the Budget Marine Invitational Match Race Cup. This is now in its second year, and it attracted some of the top guys from the match racing circuit. Perhaps that's not surprising when a prize of $5,000 goes to the winner. One team, led by Chris Nesbitt, came all the way from San Diego, California. Chris hasn't had the experience of some of the other match races, but he is climbing up the ISAF rankings. Before the start of the race, I asked Chris about the Genoa Sunfast 20s they would sail and how he saw his chances against last year's winner and America's Cup helmsman, Peter Holmberg. Chris Nesbitt, skipper, here to take on the big boys, to take on Peter Eisler and Peter Holmberg, last year's winner. Chris, you haven't been match racing a long time, but you did win the Butler Cup sailing a Catalina. And there you are in St Martin. First of all, what do you think about these boats that you're going to be sailing here, these Sunfast 20s?
Yeah, they're quite unique, definitely unlike anything else we've been match racing in to date, so it'll be a challenge for us just to learn the equipment today to be prepared for the actual racing tomorrow.
Yeah, and the Catalina is a totally different boat, isn't it?
Yeah, these boats are quite different from a 37-foot with a fixed keel, yes.
Looking around at the conditions, you've already mentioned that you were out training this morning in conditions which really, there just isn't a lot of wind, is there?
Morning there wasn't much wind at all, but it's shifted a little bit to the left and filled in nicely and looks to be a good breeze for this afternoon's sail, so...
And what about these guys, Eisler and the last year's winner, Peter Holmberg? You really think you can take them on?
Oh, boy, that's a big question. You know, they're both well accomplished in the sport, in particular the match racing aspect of it. And, I think it's just an accomplishment for us to get down here, and we're looking forward to some good racing. We'll give them what we have and see how it goes.
Looking at the course out there, it's beneath these high hills, and the wind does funnel down off the hills. Even in light conditions, it switches around all over. Have you sailed in conditions like that before, or is this going to be all new to you?
Yeah, no, we've done a bit of sailing the last year in some venues that have some really shifty conditions, and so I think, it'll be a challenge for sure, but something we've been prepared for.
And the crew you brought with you? Actually, one of the guys is quite a big guy. Is that going to be an advantage in these light winds? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think it's an advantage to be, the heaviest team in light air, but it's certainly helpful when there is wind to be at weight. And so we try to plan our crew weight right around the maximum weight and be similar in size to what we estimated the other teams would be.
All right, well, we wish you well at Yacht Blast, and I'll be out there on the water following your exploits, and let's hope we can talk again after the event, and maybe you'll be coming away with some cash in your pocket.
Let's hope so. Thanks again.
And that was Chris Nesbitt talking about his chances in the Budget Marine match race. We'll come back to Chris later, but first let's go out on the water and introduce you to some of the other sailing stars and then follow the last few minutes of the final race. The noise you can hear in the background is the flogging of sails and somebody digging into an ice chest as they change boats here in this curtain raiser for the Heineken Regatta, the Budget Marine Match Race Cup. Of course, we've got an all-star cast of players here today. Let me run through them really quickly for you. We have Peter Holmberg, last year's winner of the Budget Marine Match Race. Peter Helm Delinghi, 2007, is America's Cup man. So he knows his stuff. He's from St. Thomas, a local guy. People like to see him win. He's up against Peter Eisler. Peter was navigator on BMW Oracle, also the 2007 America's Cup. These guys do know each other quite well. However, Eisler says he's moved away from small boat sailing, so it will be interesting to see how he performs today. Another sailing star doing his best to win the first prize of $5,000 is Kiwi Gavin Brady, and he's another guy with four America's Cup campaigns under his belt. Now, the last time he was in St Martin was as the winning helmsman on the Far 80 Bow Jest during the Maxi Transatlantic Challenge in December. And really, the boat he's sailing now couldn't be more different. A bit like comparing a Formula One race car to a Model T Ford. Also out there on the water is Mark Fitzgerald, long-time skipper for Sir Peter Harrison's 115-foot far Sojourner. Yes, he's back, and he came second last year and won the prize of $3,000. And perhaps the wild card in all this is the Russian match racer Yevgeny Nikiforov. He's ranked number 45 in the ISAF rankings, which actually puts him higher than all the other guys he's racing against. He came third here last year, and he walked away with $2,000. Now, the wind is cooperating today. We thought maybe it wouldn't, but there's a good southeasterly blowing, probably about 10 to 12 knots. It's almost picture-perfect conditions. In match racing, we have two boats racing against each other, but there are actually six out on the water. So two boats racing each other in three separate teams, and these are called flights. We're now on flight number 7, or maybe flight number 8 coming up, so we're really getting through these races today. Things are going really well. The committee have got this down to a fine art now, and this really is a spectacular event. Sanctioned by ISAF, a Category 5 ISAF race. That means that where these guys finish will go towards their ISAF rankings. And going into the final of the last two races is, again, Peter Holmberg. He has to win this race, and he's racing Gavin Brady. The race for third place is almost over, and it looks like Peter Eisler is going to take that race over Chris Nesbitt. Peter Holmberg is away with a good start and staying over to the left-hand side of the course. The wind is all over, shifting around now. It has favoured the right-hand side of the course, but right now it's coming right down the middle by the look of it. Peter Holmberg used to these conditions here in the Caribbean. Well, that's interesting now. They've split tacks. What usually happens is one boat covers the other boat, but here they've split tacks. That means that one boat's looking for a different wind. If they stay together, covering each other, then one boat can force the other one into a penalty, but that doesn't happen once they split tacks. It's a big risk, and I don't think that's going to pay off. I think Peter Holmberg made the lay line on that tack for the windward mark. Yes, he's rounding that mark now. Well ahead. And that's the battle for third place over. And that goes to Peter Eisler, a very disappointed-looking Chris Nesbitt and his team. But Chris Nesbitt did really well just being here. Came all the way from California. And now all concentrating on the final race here with Peter Holmberg. Unless Holmberg makes a huge mistake, this race is in the bag. The boats just rounded the leeward mark for the final time, and Gavin Brady just took a huge gamble there. He's so far behind now, he had to try something. And he went way, way, way off towards the left of the course. Holmberg has already rounded the windward mark, and he's on his way back down the course for the final time. And this is it. This is the end of the Budget Marine Match Racing Cup. It's been a great race, and I'm sure we'll have all these same sailing stars back here with us again next year. Gavin Brady now at least 10 foot lengths behind on this final downwind run. Blue sky, some white puffy clouds, nice breeze to end this regatta. Lots of spectators this year, and what a good move to race it here, closer in to the shore, in the middle of the lagoon, where you can actually see it from the St Martin Yacht Club. Four boat lengths away from victory for Peter Holmberg. There you go, Peter Holmberg, again, $5,000 better off. Peter, you did it again, spoke to you this time last year, another $5,000 better off. We're going to have to keep you out of St Martin. How do you feel?
There's prize money for this?
How do you feel?
Yeah, nice, man. Good to race against Gavin and his boys. They're good sailors, and everybody this year, I think the level was higher, and my team was great, eh? Maurice and Ben, we've been together for a while. It just makes it a little bit easier, so good stuff.
Congratulations.
All right, man.
And that's it from us at the Budget Marine Match Racing Cup for 2010. And so the Budget Marine Match Race Cup was won by Holmberg from St Thomas. Rather predictable, wasn't it? Peter was followed home by New Zealander Gavin Brady, and third place went to Peter Eisler. All three winners have a long history with the America's Cup. That's what makes them so good. So what about Chris Nesbitt? Well, a disastrous start in one of the final races cost him third place. Needless to say, he was rather disappointed. Here he is talking to me about what might have been. So Chris, you came, you saw, you didn't quite conquer, but boy, you came close, all down to the last couple of races. I saw you there, you looked very, very disappointed, but yet you did so well. How are you feeling?
Oh, yeah, you know, it's frustrating when you get that close, and, you know, I feel bad for the guys that came all this way to sail with me, and I kind of feel like I let them down, but, you know, we did well, we could have done better, and, you know, there's always next year, so...
Well, yeah, that's the way to look at it, but I don't feel that, from my point of view, you let anybody down. I mean, you came up against some stiff competition. I talked to Peter Holmberg, and he said that this year the competition was much fiercer than last year. For you guys to come out here all the way from California, long way to come, you know, it takes a while to settle into the Caribbean, into these conditions, and then to push it and get a fourth place is pretty remarkable.
You know, we traveled on Sunday because we wanted to try to practice at home on Saturday, knowing we'd have access to the boat, and didn't really know what we'd be getting into down here, if you'd be able to, you know, if we came in a day early, if it would matter, if we'd be able to sail both days. And I'll tell you, you know, I'm someone who takes a little bit longer than some others possibly to adjust to the time zone differences. And so, you know, the practice day was a long day for us, and I felt a lot better today, coming in today this morning when we woke up. And really looking forward to the racing. The breeze was awesome, and we had a great morning, got off to a really good start. Thought we were right where we needed to be. And then, you know, I just made some really tragic starting errors, and so it's disappointing to finish on that note. But, you know, still made the top four, which is not too bad considering who was there, I think.
The starting error, I wouldn't worry about it too much. I just seen two in the America's Cup. So you're in good company.
When you're over, you're over. That's all there is to it, yeah.
Finally, Chris, anything to say to your crew?
You know, just an apology for the way I came off the line this regatta. You know, they sailed wonderful, and I'm sure if we had had a little bit better starts, they would have performed, you know, the way they did when we did have good starts. And so, you know, big thank you to them for coming down here. Both Brian and Esau did a wonderful job, put up with my complaining the whole weekend and through the good races and the bad. So big thank you to them.
Chris, I'm going to be watching closely to see your name climbing up those ISAF rankings, and hopefully we'll see you back here for the Budget Marine Match Race again next year.
I sure hope so, and we're definitely going to apply.
And that was rising star Chris Nesbitt talking to me at the awards ceremony for the Budget Marine Match Race Cup. Right, we'll break for some music, and then I'll take you back onto the water for the Gil Commodores Cup. Now, if you're going to the regatta's closing party tonight on Kimshaw Beach, then here's one you'll hear from the man himself, Maxie Priest. Yeah, Maxie Priest and Wild World. I met Maxie when he came into the Island 92 studio, and what a cool guy. Listen to this.
Yo, what up? This is Maxie Priest. And don't forget, whenever you need marine information, listen to Yacht Blast with Gary Brown, Island 92.
You see, listen to Yacht Blast and you're in good company. Good old Maxie Priest. Now, remember that your favourite sailing show is on Twitter, and if you would like to tweet me, then go to twitter.com/OceanMedia. Over the years, the organisers of the Heineken Regatta noticed that many of the boats taking part went out to practice for the event on Thursday. And so they said, let's introduce another race, separate to the Heineken Regatta, that will allow the guys to warm up in a more competitive way. That race is the Commodores Cup, a one-day event with its own set of trophies. The event is open to the Spinnaker-class boats only, and this year, all the big boys came out to play. Join me now as I take you out to the water and the start of this race, and as we follow the boats to the first windward mark. We're on our way out to the start of the Gil Commodores Cup. The noise you can hear in the background are the engines on the sports fishing boat Teldrin. That's our press boat for today. Beautiful day, blue sky, some cloud, some haze, bit humid, and we're punching into a light southerly chop, still in the lee of Pelican Reef. I'm sure that the chop will kick up a little bit as we clear the reef. The boats are already out here. They've been practicing since early this morning. I can see spinnakers. I can see large head sails. The first race to start is the big boats, the Class A boats. These are the ones we want to see. This is the one with the magnificent Teton 15, the boat we've all been waiting for, and soon we'll know just how well this boat can perform. We're out at the start line by the committee boat for the Gil Commodores Cup. The seas are running about 3 feet, the wind southeast 8 to 10 knots, and the sea is the bluest I have ever seen it in all my time in the Caribbean. Never seen a sea this blue. It's an absolutely spectacular, sparkling day. And there we go, that's the start of the first Gil Commodores Cup. You can hear our engines revving now, we're taking off after the boats. Teton 15, Tom Hill from Puerto Rico, good start. Highland Fling, the big Wally, was the first across the line. Teton's to windward, Highland Fling to leeward. The boats sticking to the pin end of the line as they head for the first windward mark. That's the first tack, and it's Teton 15 tacked over onto port. The first boat to tack, leaving the other boats heading away on starboard. What does this guy know that everyone else doesn't know? Maybe he's just looking for some clean wind. Heading behind the fleet now, Teton 15. Island fling, the Wally, directly astern of us. Guys out on the rail, hiking out. Quite calm conditions today. The winds were predicted to be heavier earlier in the week, but they've readjusted the forecast, and these winds down 9, 10 knots maybe. Teton heading way out to the right-hand side of the course, away from all the other boats. All the other boats holding the starboard tack and heading inshore. Float plane flying overhead, taking photographs. And Teton still heading way, way to the right of the course. The big Wally, Highland Fling, heading way over to the left-hand side of the course, followed by Equation, the Andrews 68, I think it's a 68, Bill Alcott, skipper. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 guys on the windward rail on Equation. Same amount on the Wally. Teton 15 now, almost out of sight. It's gone so far to the right, still holding that port tack while everyone else is going inshore. It's going to be very, very interesting at the windward mark when these boats come back together. Has he made a big mistake here, or does he really know something? Maybe he's tracking the current, because the current can run up and down this coast and give you an advantage just inshore or offshore, but you really do need to know where that current is. Another boat just tacked. So that's two boats now on to port tack. And the Wally's tacked now. They're all tacking, in fact. It's going to be very interesting at the windward mark. Tom Hill, Teton 15, is an old hand here at the St Martin Heineken Regatta. Comes every year, just about every year. Had some problems the last time he was here with some breakages, but he's back with this brand new Rachel Pugh boat, twin rudders, super high-tech boat, absolutely writes the rule book on flush deck technology. Nothing above deck whatsoever except the winch is completely flat and they tell me completely empty down below. Super competitive, and it's really good to see these boats here. This Class A of the Commodore's Cup, they've managed to put all the very, very light boats together in this one class, and so that means the handicaps are fairly close. And they've really made a great event out of this Guild Commodore's Cup. We're going to head up to the windward mark now, and we'll bring you our next report from that position. And this is exactly what we wanted to see. Highland Fling crossing tacks with Teton, these two magnificent boats. Teton colour scheme, bright red, all the way back to amidships, and it fades out to black. Beautiful paint job. And Highland Fling, all black hull, very dark sails, grey sails, Kevlar mix of all sorts of exotic material. Both of them now heading for the windward mark, and it's Highland Fling is the leading boat right now. Both boats are on port tack. Highland Fling is the windward boat. Port hand rounding of the mark. All the photographers, of course, have gathered here at this windward mark to see this. This is what we came for. This is what we want to see. These two magnificent boats giving us a great show. As I look back down the course, coming in from the left is Equation. She's probably on the lay line. I would say certainly on the lay line. And she's on starboard tack. Teton on port tack. Highland Fling on port tack. Highland Fling, the windward boat. Equation powering in. And now here comes Highland Fling as tacked. She's obviously on the lay line. She's very close to the mark. So she's the first boat to reach the windward mark. Teton tacked. She's astern. About 5-6 boat lengths adrift of Highland Fling. Now we're going to watch this way, where the spinnakers are going to go. They're going to pop the spinnakers. The guys on Highland Fling are on the bow. They're dragging the spinnaker along the deck. They're ready to go with it. One of the guys is signalling from the bow to the after guard. She's rounding the mark. Maybe you can hear the power of these winches as the sheets are eased. The guys are on the halyards. We're backing down. We're looking right over the stern now of Highland Fling. And there goes the spinnaker set inside the headsail. This is where it could all go wrong, but in these winds it shouldn't with this professional crew. If they can't get it right today, they'll never get it right. And here comes Teton. We're just 20 feet away from her. We're so close, I could even throw this microphone over to them and get them to do some commentary for me. There you go, and maybe you can hear the winches. Much quicker with the spinnaker on Teton. Much quicker than Highland Fling. A far better set. That spinnaker went up the second they rounded the mark, whereas Highland Fling was a bit slower. Here comes Equation. Let's see how they do with their spinnaker. I must say Highland Fling has got the most spectacular spinnaker. The spinnaker has a huge thistle which of course is the emblem of Scotland on the spinnaker. Very distinctive, very nice. And there goes the equation round the mark. Come on, guys, haul on that halyard. There it goes. Another good spinnaker set. So far, the best spinnaker set has definitely been Teton and Equation. And those seconds in a race like this can count for so much. And the three leading boats are away. We're going to follow them again down the course. The first, Gill, Commodore's Cup. Exciting stuff. Yes, and it was indeed. And this year's Commodore's Cup and the winner of that particular race, Spinnaker 1, was Highland Fling. However, the Cup itself, which is awarded for best performance amongst the seven Spinnaker classes overall, went to Calvin Reed's Alandra, a production Beneteau First 40.7, sailing in the highly competitive Racing B class. You see, you don't have to have an 80-footer with 20 professional crew to win trophies. And we say well done to those guys. Now, this year, this event was sponsored by the sailing clothing manufacturer Gill. So from now on, it will be known as the Gill's Commodore's Cup. We'll take a break, and when we come back, I'll be talking to Gill's company founder and CEO, Nick Gill, and head of Gill's North American division, David Pritchard. Indeed, my new novel, Caribbean High, will be available soon, I promise. And of course, I'll let you know when. In the meantime, if you would like more information, then go to my website, www.garyebrown.net.
If you have a local or international sailing event you would like to feature on Yacht Blast, or an interesting story you would like to share with our listeners, email gaz at island92.com.
Yes, please do email me. All emails are replied to. Now, sponsorship. Without it, there would be no international regattas. And this year, Gill Sailing Clothing have moved into the Caribbean in a big way by sponsoring the St. Martin Commodore's Cup. Their sponsorship coincides with the launch of a new line of sailing clothing designed for warm weather sailing, such as we find here in the Caribbean. Who better to tell us about it than company CEO Nick Gill and the man who heads the company's North American division, David Pritchard.
Well, this is it's a 30th anniversary of the Heineken, and they've done an outstanding job. Robbie and the team down here have done an outstanding job building this event up to be one of the largest regattas now in North America. Gill as a brand likes to move towards these sorts of activities where a lot of our customers are participating. This is an area where the Caribbean is a target market for Gill, and it makes perfect sense for us to be here. We're supporting our local dealer, Budget Marine. They're very interested in developing the market also, and this is just part of a strategy that we'll be rolling out now over the next few years.
And you're also sponsoring the Budget Marine Meldis 24 with Chris there as skipper, and he's one of the managers at Budget Marine. So that's like a marriage made in heaven right there, I think.
Yeah, he's very enthusiastic. He's got a great team. Some of the guys, a lot of the trade here sail on that boat. We sponsor racers through the Gill Race Team program. And he has the Gill logo on the main, and actually wears our gear, tests our gear, sends us ideas, and he's there out there for visibility.
Well, that's interesting. They're actually testing your clothing in the field.
It's a natural platform for testing. Part of the relationship, we provide gear, they provide feedback. We have forms that they fill out and send back to us. We're testing new fabrics, new ideas. A lot of them don't work out, but many of them do.
Nick Gill, your family founded this business. How long ago would that be?
It was 35 years ago, later this year.
Well, we've come a long way since the old clothing of 35 years ago. I remember 35 years ago buying my oilskins from the fishing guys, but the trawler men bought with the big sou'westers. So we've come a long, long way in that time.
A huge distance. I mean, what you're talking about, you probably could stand up in the corner and they'd be uncomfortable, they would sweat. Today, everything is about comfort. It breathes, it's lighter weight. The technology has been huge.
We are here at the Gill booth at the St. Martin Heineken Regatta, and we have on display some clothing. Nick, why don't you tell me about this a little bit? Let's walk down and look at the new race collection. You were explaining a little bit about it to me earlier. Just take me through it again.
The race collection is the result of a two-year development program aimed at warm conditions, warm sailing conditions, where the water is warm, the sun is very hot and strong. It's more about cooling and UV protection than necessarily about keeping you warm and dry. And I think people have always assumed in the past a pair of cotton shorts and T-shirt would do the job. But really today, the advances in soft fabrics are enormous. They're quick drying, they're UV resistant, they're antimicrobial, which means they don't smell when you've been wearing them for a couple of days, and they wick moisture away. So at the end of a day's racing, you're actually just about as comfortable as you were when you put a clean shirt on in the morning. And what you will see here is a range of shirts, also lightweight waterproof jackets. We've actually produced the lightest weight waterproof jacket on the market, the performance jacket. It's not just light and undurable, it's light and durable. It's a three-layer fabric, highly breathable. The features are stripped out to make it light and comfortable. And it's a very much a performance garment, but a performance garment for these conditions, the warm weather conditions.
And the shorts there that go with them, I can see they've got some strengthener in them.
A really interesting product. We sent our entire design team of six down to the Mediterranean to the Med Cup. And they sail for 2 days with Quantum, Terry Hutchinson and his team, on the TP52. And they were there to observe, to look, to listen, to question. One of the things they noticed was that the crew, where they were hiking out, all their weight is taken across their abdomen, and they were getting bruised, badly bruised, and literally black and blue. And they said, what we really need is something that will protect us. So when we charge from one side of the boat to the other on attack, and we launch ourselves at the rail, we are cushioning it. So what we've done is used a Lycra stretch undershort and built in a neoprene Kevlar reinforced material.
The Kevlar there, what you're rubbing your hand against?
It's Kevlar on the outside with neoprene underneath to give it some soft cushioning. You can wear these under your shorts. Nobody would actually know you're wearing them. But when you hit that rail, it gives you a real cushion.
Now, let's just go back to David here. David, what about real cold weather stuff? I mean, we've all seen these amazing pictures of the Volvo Ocean Race down in the Southern Ocean. The guys, like, being under a fire hose. You're from North America. It gets damn cold up there in the spring and autumn, and people do sail all year round. What's Gil got lined up for cold weather sailors?
We have a comprehensive range for dinghy sailors, for the offshore, the ocean-going applications. Really, 65% of our line is all about foul weather gear. And that's really where the dollars are. That's where the revenue is in the business. We use a combination of three-layer fabrics, two-layer fabrics. We are pioneers in the area of laminate fabrics, which is a very soft-weight, highly breathable fabric that we now incorporate into our dinghy products and some of our core coastal and inshore pieces. So there's a wide variety. We just recommend the customer tries on the different choices and for fit and for function, and they'll zero in on what they need. There's a wide assortment there to choose from.
Two final questions. One, my wife is very small. She always has a problem finding foul weather gear to fit. The other question is, if she can find foul weather gear, can you find Gil foul weather gear throughout the Caribbean?
Absolutely. We have many dealers through the Caribbean. Budget Marine has several locations. We have Golden Hind up in the BVI and places north. We also have a very good selection of women's foul weather gear. We start at ladies USA size 6. We go up to size 16. And those sizes are available not only in the cold weather foul weather gear series, but also in the summer weight products.
Gentlemen, thank you for sharing that with us on Yacht Blast, and it's really nice to talk to you, and have a great Heineken Regatta.
Thank you.
And that was CEO of Gil Sailing Clothing, that's Nick Gil, and David Pritchard, head of Gil USA, talking about sponsorship and their new line of warm weather sailing gear. And I have to tell you that I've chucked my old cotton shirts into the bin, and I'm now wearing one of their UV sailing shirts, and it does exactly what it says on the tin. When I come back, I'll be talking to Olympic champion Robbie Haynes, and he's got some interesting things to say about canting keels and a few scathing remarks concerning the America's Cup.
Island 92.
Now, when we talk about top-class sailors, Robbie Haynes is one that often comes to mind. In the 80s, Robbie won 7 world championships in 4 different classes of boats. He was a great friend of the late Roy Disney and worked with him on building the then-radical Rachel Pugh Canting Keel Flyer Pywacket, the yacht that caused so much excitement at the Heineken Regatta in 2006. I talked to Robbie at the press conference held at Port de Pleasance on Thursday, and he had some interesting things to say on yacht design and especially the America's Cup. Robbie, we first met when you were here with Pywacket, sailing with Roy Disney. Now, Pywacket, when we saw that boat come into the lagoon, we were all awestruck. Came in with the canting keel to one side because of the depth, and we thought yachting had reached the ultimate. Now, here we are, you're back here. Things have moved on. How has technology changed in so short a time from what we experienced with Pywacket?
Yeah, there's been some changes since we designed Pywacket. It's been like 4 years ago with the canting keel. And there are boats now with twin rudders that were never around 4 years ago. So there has been some changes in the design. I think if I had to build a boat right now, I may not do another canting keel boat because it's just a hard boat to maintain. And you have to, you know, every time you tack, you have to move the keel back and forth. So it's a little bit awkward, but it sure produces a faster boat. It allows you to make a lighter boat, and it's stiffer, and it just goes faster. So,
but to move away from canting keels, wouldn't that slow things down again?
Oh, it would slow things down. It's just the boat I'm sailing on here has a standard keel that doesn't cant, and it's just really nice to sail it, to not have to worry about the cant every time you tack or every time you jibe. So I guess what I'm saying is, as I'm getting older, it's nice sailing on more simple boats rather than the complicated boats like Pywacket was.
What have been the major changes in the last 4 years? Where we've moved on from Pywacket to, for example, Highland Fling, which it says is a cruising boat, yeah, it's a very, very fast cruising boat. We're looking at Teton 15. We're looking at boats now that are much faster. It's been such a short period.
Yeah, you know, I really don't think that Highland Fling or Teton are any faster than the 85-foot Pywacket we had here a few years ago. I think that if we had Pywacket here, it would still be quite fast. Now, when you talk about Rambler, which is a 90-foot water-ballasted boat, mm-hmm. You know, that's a different animal. That's more like Pywacket. That's more of a shifting ballast type boat. Teton, I believe, I may be wrong, is not a canting keel boat, but it has twin rudders. Mm-hmm. Highland Fling has twin rudders. I don't believe it's a canting keel boat. I'm not sure, but I don't think so. But it also has all hydraulics, and that's what powers the winches. And, you know, if I had to redo Pywacket, I'd have the hydraulic winches because they're just too big a boat to do with human power.
Now, what about the sailors themselves? The sport is now very, very professional. Lots of people are racing for prize money. Do you think that's a good thing?
I think every sport has different factions of the pros and the amateurs. I mean, any sport you participate in has that. And I think the pro part of the sport is good for sailing. I mean, there are a lot of pro sailors right now because of the America's Cup fiasco that are unemployed, which is unfortunate. But it'll come back. I think the fact that Larry Ellison worked really, really hard to keep the America's Cup the way it should be, mm-hmm. I just think that, you know, there are going to be a lot of sailors that are going to be able to be employed in the future because the America's Cup is going to go back to where it should be, which is, you know, a bunch of nations competing for the America's Cup rather than just two boats.
You said fiasco. Is there going to be any good come out of it? It was amazing to watch this high-tech trimaran, this catamaran, wonderful stuff, but all those years in litigation, all that money spent for like 6 hours of racing, are we going to get any good out of it at all?
I think for sure we're going to get some good out of it. You know, during the whole litigation thing, I got so bored with it, I didn't really care about even listening, which I'm sure most people felt the same way. However, when BMW Oracle won the America's Cup, I started thinking, you know, Larry Ellison really spent a lot of effort and a lot of money to tell Ernesto, you know, Bertarelli, you know, you can't do that thing. You can't do that on a bunch of different issues. And it was absolutely for sure the best thing for the America's Cup that Larry Ellison did that. You know, he did the right thing. He didn't allow it to turn into the Alinghi Cup. He put his money where his mouth was, and he, you know, he saved the America's Cup, in my opinion.
Let's bring you back to the Heineken Regatta. You're back again. What makes this regatta so special for you?
It's the competition. It's the weather. It's the organization. Everything about it is, I think it's the best regatta I've ever sailed in. And every time I come down here, this is my third time, it's just so much fun. And I think it's just such a fantastic place to sail weather-wise and scenery. And I just love it. I mean, I wish I could come down every year, but unfortunately I can't. As I said, this is my third time, and it's just the best regatta in the world, in my opinion.
You heard that from Robbie Haynes, the man himself. Robbie, lovely to talk to you again, and thanks for sharing that with us here on Yacht Blast.
Thank you.
International and Olympic sailor and sailmaker, Robbie Haynes, telling it how it is.
You're listening to Yacht Blast on Island 92, 91.9 FM.
Yesterday I had the great privilege of sailing on board Tom and Dottie Hill's 75-foot Rachel Pugh design Teton 15. All the crew welcomed me on board, and it was a day I will never forget. In the third race, Teton blew out to spinnaker, and the speed at which the guys got it down and another sail set was remarkable, and that's what you get with a high-calibre crew. So a special thanks to Teton 15 for allowing us on board with our recording equipment. Now, unfortunately, I'm unable to bring you that feature, but I will have it for you next week, along with a final wrap of the Caribbean's largest and best regatta. Now, if you would like a preview of that Teton feature, then you can hear it by going to heinekenregatta.com and clicking on Audio News. And, of course, heinekenregatta.com is where you'll find all the information, all the results from the last 4 or 5 days of racing, and, of course, all the party information. Now, we are coming to the end of the show, but do stay with us, and I'll tell you why. Because Herb is coming in, and Herb and I will be going back to the music, but we will keep you up to date on the last few hours of the 30th St. Martin Heineken Regatta. I have to admit I lost my place there. After that, we'll be on our way to Kimshar Beach, where we'll be broadcasting live from La Bamba's Beach Bar, and tonight's Regatta Awards ceremony, rain permitting. Now, don't forget, the headline act is reggae legend Max Priest. We'll have more on tonight's regatta party after Yacht Blast. Before I go, I want to thank everyone who took part in today's show, and of course, a big thanks to you for listening. Join me again next time for more rock, blues, and sailing news. Until then, safe sailing.